want to thank Lior for asking me to come and share my experience, strength, and hope.
Hi, Joe.
Hi. Just so you know, I mean, that I'm a compulsive reader. I am. I mean, I definitely am a compulsive reader. And I came into Overeaters Anonymous May of 1976. And I basically was about, I was not about, but I was 288 pounds. And for 20 years, I did what people told me to do. I got active, I did service. And for 20 years, I had lost well over 100 pounds. And I'm usually good with dates and numbers, but I came in May, and of all things, I don't remember the, I know it was the first couple weeks of May, which is amazing for me because I know dates, trust me. But I don't remember the day. So it sounds crazy, and it just came to my mind, so I usually use whenever the Israeli Independence Day is, and don't ask me why, because it's around there. Anyway, so, and then in approximately 1999-2000, Legoland, with my husband and my then little kids, now 21, I went... I don't know. Also, I wanted to mention to the newcomers, I don't know how new you are, but we read from the Alcoholics Anonymous book, and the reason why they just totally, how Holly read strictly what it said, because AA has asked us to not change the words. So, but this is OA. And a lot of us, including myself, still go by this. Anyway, without, no, I don't know what happened, but... I went to get a diet soda from the hotel gift shop, and I was in the bathroom binging. I really cannot tell you what happened, even till this day. Other than I know I'm a compulsive overeater, that's why it happened. And it took me probably 10 to 12 years to, in November of 2010, I started working with somebody who had the same experience I did. She had 10 years of relapse, and then she had 5 at that time. And so I just, we're friends, but, and it, didn't really want her as a sponsor, but it ended up working that way where I was, what I wanted to do was to be able to be honest about what I put in my mouth, because I knew once I got clean, and this is my story, once I got clean from what was going in my mouth, eventually the recovery would come. It got, you know, when I, before OA, you know, I didn't know a feeling if it hit me in the face. I didn't know a lot of stuff. I was too busy eating. And just to let you know, because I want to talk a little bit about it, is I was really never thin. And I'm in the middle of two sisters that were thin. And a brother that is younger than us, and he was thin, and I had parents that had this disease, but I, somewhere along the line, my MO was, I had to be what I thought you wanted me to be in order to be loved. So that was my MO for many years, and that can build a lot of resentments. So even though I didn't know about resentments, even though I didn't know about all that stuff until I walked in this room, it's obviously what I harbored. And from a very early, I'm a product of the, I was born in 1952, and you can do the math, and it's a lot of musicals, a lot of like, boy gets girl, boy loses girl, boy gets whoever, boy gets girl back again or whatever. I lived in that fantasy world, literally in that fantasy world. And in May of 1976, my life became a reality, a little at a time. And I was, from 9 years old, I was overweight, very overweight. And then it wasn't really until OA that I started some kind of plan of eating and a way of living You know, I had heard about AA, I think, and I know that it was an act of God, my belief in God, that got me to my first meeting and kept me coming, because it was, not that I'm so religious, but I was born of the Jewish faith. I hardly went into churches, and this first meeting that I went to was in a church, and everybody stood and said held hands and said the Lord's Prayer, which we don't do so much anymore, but it was the Lord's Prayer, and I don't know why it didn't have me run away. I know why now, but it didn't. And I just started, because I'm a people pleaser, I started doing what people told me to do, and that is to build some kind of format where I could, or a foundation. And basically, a lot of these people are real, most of them are still around today, and have abstinence for, you know, 40, 40, 55 years, whatever they have, okay, because we're about 58, 59, I think, OA. And I basically did what people told me to do. And I got active, and, you know, you give what you, you know, you can keep what you've got if you give it away. So I did service. I just did what other people told me to do. And in December of 1999 or 2000, I just chose to give it away. And I'm definitely, even though, you know, I'm not an alcoholic, but I think of my 20 years, and it's in this story, this book, where I basically, for 20 years, maintained an abstinence. Wasn't perfect, but I maintained an abstinence on all three levels. And somewhere in my 20th year, I chose to let it go. In other words, I pulled out my carpet slippers. Anybody know that story? And I could have been dead within 5 years, but I guess God wanted me to live, because I, for the next 10 to 12, I had problems. And I think my story is more of relapsing, because it, even though I never left OA and I still did service and I still did stuff, I felt the lowest of low. The binge that happened those last 10 years got darker than I can remember even before OA, because before OA, I didn't know about OA. And when you know about OA and you know you can recover, and I simply could not or would not, it's pretty hard. But something inside me, and I really believe it's an act of providence, is that something inside me said, just don't go. And I have a lot of friends outside OA, but in reality, a lot of my core is here. And so I think what kept me coming is to talk to people in a one-to-one. And in November of 2010, and again, it was the 28th, because I went to visit a friend, and I had no intentions of, I said, I just can't. And I sat at her house for 6 hours, and we talked, and I know that it was that. And I'll tell you, I went to a Saturday post Thanksgiving with a bunch of people in OA. And it was a delightful evening, a nice evening. And I left, this was probably November 27th, I left it, and I went to In-N-Out after a nice, healthy meal. And I had, you know, we don't talk about food here, but I have to talk about this, because this was really weird. I had a hamburger, I guess, french fries, and a chocolate shake. And then I went to the therapist, I guess, that week, and what this woman said was, and I told her what I did, and she says, well, did you binge it in and out? And I went, no. She says, well, that's okay. And in my gut, I knew it wasn't okay. I mean, I knew you don't have a good time and have a very healthy meal and wonderful fellowship, and then you go and you have to eat something. I mean, true, it wasn't like 12 million hot hamburgers, but that's not the thing. And the only reason why I bring it up, because that was what happened in November, and I would love to tell you that my food plan became perfect and then I lost all this weight, but basically 2010 and we're at 2019. It took me a while, but what I did is there's a wonderful woman in this room that I kind of had a kinship with for many, many years, and I started being honest and I started committing my food at the end, usually at the end of the day or the next day, and I was just honest. I said, I need to be honest, because I was doing that with people and I had already lost some weight, but I was kind of complacent at that weight. And a lot of the sponsors that I had started to have, they were abstinent, but they started to have life things. So I ended up just wanting to be honest. I just know for myself, if I kid with myself with what's going in my mouth and I'm not honest about it, then I'm just deceiving myself. It, you know,
That's 10.
Great, thanks. So what happened was, it wasn't like all of a sudden I started, you know, giving her my food every day. And I mean, I'm telling you everything that I ate. And it's just where I had to go. And I had to not be judged. I had to not be judged. Well, you know, there were many times that we would get together and I would talk to her and I'd say, you know, I'm just not, you know, and she would be loving and suggestive. And there's sponsors that I had. And you guys, if I could do it, I would, but I obviously could not. But there were sponsors that I have, and I don't condemn them. I don't. It's what they had to do for themselves. But if I was ever honest with what happened, like maybe I had an extra something, and I have to share this because it kept me going back out of abstinence. And they would say, okay, you can't eat that way. You got to clean yourself up and not have this for 10 days. Well, I don't know about you guys. Someone tells me I can't have something for 10 days. I'm going to have it for 10 days. But that's just me taking whatever they say, the poison, expecting somebody else to die. And in reality, that's not good. But I knew in my heart, I had to get honest with what went in my mouth. And I, from the sponsor that I had in the very beginning in November, is that she just said, keep moving. And it happens. Things do happen, what they say, especially in it, maybe not so much the food, but things happen as you continue to recover. And it really wasn't until about April or May of 2008 that I didn't leave OA. I mean, OA is it for me. I mean, I ain't going anywhere. But I took a plan at my provider. My provider, it was very interesting. She said, we have a bunch of stuff here. And also, it's getting close to summer. And there, a lot of the health, I guess a lot of the commercial food plans are cheaper. And she says, you might want to try that. Or come, there's an hour and a half thing at our, it's Kaiser. Anyway, there's an hour and a half thing and it's called healthy eating. And I went, oh yeah, that's really going to work for me. But I said, okay. And she says, just go. And there were different options. And I knew I couldn't do the pills because I have problems with drugs. And I knew that I couldn't do the protein because I knew, you know, I need to learn how to eat healthy and how to be mental, physically, and spiritually fit. That's what I need to do. And and so in May of 2018, I started going, and I just sat there in the back of the room, and I'm going, what the hell are they going to do for me? And I'm telling you, we're in February of 2019. I've lost about 45 pounds. And it's because I needed a plan of eating that was going to work for me so I can continue to work my steps. And I don't know what this particular meeting focuses on, but I wanted to just tell you a little bit about that. And because my life before OA was, it came in at 23, and I lived in a la-la land. I really did. I really lived in a musical. And then when I started OA and continued to come OA, it became my reality. And so for the last 42 years, even though I wasn't abstinent some of the times, I continued to walk the path. And I'm a firm believer, which we I don't think we've read yet, is in the third tradition that the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. And I do have that. And I've also got very attached to step, even though I'm working on step, I'm actually moving up to step 11. I bought the new OA 12 and 12 and the new workbook. And my sponsor and I, who lives in New England, I started working it, and so I'm doing that, doing the steps again for probably the third or fourth, fifth time. And I'm on, I just started step 11. And I kind of like that, praying through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact. Because in reality, you guys speak and I hear you and it gives me strength. But I have enough now to really stop and take a deep breath and to ask God what I need to do. And I make mistakes. I do make mistakes. When I started abstaining again, I was probably about 20 pounds from my top weight. So I pretty much got close to where I was. And then within the last 8 years, I had lost I don't know what it was, but I'm down probably about 60. And as you get older, and as your food choices change, it doesn't come off so quick. And I have to tell you, I'm pretty active. I do like 30 minutes a day on elliptical for 5 days a week. I go to a spin class on Sunday with my husband and my son. So it's obviously, whether it doesn't matter, I know that, because I just spoke to someone, is that I'm not in charge of this. If I listen to God and ask him to what I need to do before each meal, and it's not just about the food, but it starts with that. And I'd be lying to myself if I didn't say it. I need to know what's going in my mouth, and then I need to own it and then give it away. And also, this other person, I don't know if some of you in this room do remember him. And his name was Carl G. And I used to go out to dinner with him a lot before he got married to one of my friends. And I was just a friend of his because I was already with my husband. And he used to pray at every meal. So me and this other person that I commit my food to, we do that. Sometimes we forget, but a lot of times we stop, we take a deep breath, and we pray before each meal. And we send that to each other as well. Because I can't do this without God. I can't do this without you. And I can't do this without God. And so, basically, that's really what it's all about. And I'll tell you, it's a lot easier said than done. Because it's kind of dissipating. But I had a lot of shame about continuing to come back. And seeing people thin and seeing people that were recovering, and I didn't have it. And I'm getting better, you know. My story is not that I came in 1976 and maintained an abstinence that long. And, you know, to use an example, when I compare myself with people's outsides, I lose. And I'm living with a gentleman that I love dearly, and he is wonderful, probably less judgmental than me. And he has that back to back. And it was hard. And it's not just because of him. It's because of how I viewed my insides, mentally, physically, and spiritually, with you guys. And it killed me for years. So slowly but surely, people in this room told me to put down the stick. So it's pretty much down most of the time. But it's something because I feel it's again, not about the weight, but it is about the weight. This is the lowest I've been in a long time. And it's scary. And I'm starting to be a little cocky. And I'm starting to be like, but I'm still, what I made a decision to do is to continue to come up to OA, which I would not really want to ever not happen. And this class that I go to, it's become a very supportive, very loving class. We're one of the best classes they have. It's a Saturday morning. It's from 9 to 10:30. And we talk. There's a behaviorist and a nutritionist. Gives good ideas. And they also, you know, and this is maybe what other people can't do, but I needed to be accountable. And the fact that they weigh you every week, it's something I couldn't do it just once a month, because then I start to be unaccountable. So I go in there and they're supportive. They don't even say anything about that. It's basically my gauge. And I'll tell you, choices during the holidays weren't so great. I was up a little bit and now I'm down. But it's just, I said to God, I don't want to stop. And I don't know what my maintenance is. I have no idea what it is. I said, but I don't really want to stop, because I don't think I want to stop right now. I want to continue to go and continue to go to meetings. And I just share a little bit about after being out of relapse for a while is that, now that's 10, right? Okay. Is 20. Okay. I don't know if I'm going to go 30, but is... When I did my 4-step and then I did my 10-step, because I just finished the 10-step, kind of stuff came up, and not a lot. And this woman has been in OA for a while. She lives in Massachusetts. And she told me that we were sitting there talking, and it was after my 4-step. And she says, you know, we know each other enough, but it was great, because she has that kind of, you know, she says, your assertiveness is like in the toilet. You're just not assertive enough about yourself. You don't care enough about yourself. And it was funny, but you had to be there, so, because you guys are not laughing, but it was funny, is that, and I realized that it's my assertiveness, the lack of my assertiveness that gets me into trouble. And it's not real hard, it's not real easy for me to do. And especially when you're in relationships, whatever the relationships are, is that I never did speak up. And I have done it through the years. So what I basically developed, and it doesn't happen all the time, and I make mistakes, and then I have to go and share it with my sponsor, is, like, what? Okay, God, what would I say and do if I wasn't afraid? Which is hard, because I don't always think about that. Because I need to work, because it talks about, and I don't know exactly, but it talks about in the workbook, and when you answer those questions, is that, you know, how can I basically, like, why should you do this? And basically, because I want to keep my recovery, I want to continue to grow. And I don't want to be defensive, but I want to be assertive and to speak my piece. And it doesn't matter how this other person or people react. But I can't be defensive, because then... And also, I have to remember, I've been doing this for a long time. People expect this of me. So all of a sudden, I have this change of attitude, and I ain't going to take it anymore. And I know it's in a movie somewhere, like probably in the 60s or 70s, is I'm not going to take this anymore, but I can't do it defensively. I have to do it with God's help. And that, it's the hardest thing. It's the hardest thing. Now, that's not all my defects, but that was the one that was really glaring, is my lack of self, my lack of kind of self-respect and a lack of assertiveness. And so that's really what I have been working on. And what I also did is I was talking to my sponsor, and it didn't really come up until the 10th step, and I decided to make amends to my husband with the years that I was eating. And I said, I don't know, do I really, I mean, not like he didn't know, but it's like, I said, what should I do? And she says, you know, just think about it and ask God for help. And one day we were out, and I don't remember, and I said, and my son was in the back seat, and he had his earbuds on, so not that he would get what we were talking about, but I said, you know, I really want to apologize. I said, I was really not there. I was not focused. I was not in the present, and I did a lot of damage, you know, when I was eating. And I was still an okay mom, but I know I could have been better, and an okay wife, because there was stuff that I really escaped through a lot. And wanted to, when you eat, for me, when I'm in eat, I want to be in isolation. I don't want anyone to deal with. I don't want to have to deal with anybody. I even have problems with that today, and I'm abstaining. you know, just everybody leave me alone. But I said something, and he just didn't say anything. And but I had to do it for myself, because he probably knew it, and he was kind enough not to say anything. But, and I said, you know, and there's also things that I need to do, and we need to work on stuff, because there's sometimes food in our house. I have to put it in the trunk of his car. And I don't want to go into a lot of detail, but we do a lot of entertaining, and there are people that come. And in reality, I know for years there was stuff at work that I didn't even notice during the holidays. So if I'm in a better frame of mind, it doesn't have to bug me. But if I also know now today, if it's starting to bug me, and we just had a bunch of people over yesterday from my husband's side. They're just longtime friends of his dad, and who his dad has already passed away. But and there's already stuff in the house that's starting to bug me, and it's going to work with him on Tuesday. I'm not going to keep it in the house. And that's my step of assertiveness. And if he doesn't like it, then I said, it's okay, I'm going to wrap it up, and you can take it to work, and you can give it to your staff. And I said that because I need to take care of myself. Because it starts with, it's kind of, I don't have a problem with alcohol, but they talk about this. If I'm kind of shaky, the best thing to do is not go into a bar. And for me, when I'm shaky, and I'm not shaky, but I can be, and when I kind of feel that instinct to do that, because my first instinct is to compulsive overeat, it's got to get out of my house. It's got to get out of my house. And it could be a little challenging, but that's where I'm taking my step in assertiveness. Because if I'm not taking care of myself, it's the oxygen. If I'm not taking care of myself, I can't take care of myself, and I can't take care of the people that I love in my life. And there's a lot of little things that I do every day is to take the opportunity, because I don't always, I mean, a lot of people in this program view me as very nice and loving and very giving, which I am, but there's a different side of me at home. And not that I'm awful, but I tend to, the one you're closest to, not treat very great. And so I say a phrase every morning about having to take the opportunity to be loving, warm, courteous, all this stuff. I have a thing that I read, plus the Voices of Recovery and what's the other one? The For Today. And I, for the last 42 and a half years, I've read, it's an outside, but it's the One Day at a Time Al-Anon book, because I get to mind my own business. And then I typed up some stuff, and I laminated it that I use, because it's important for me to do that. It's important for me to say the first three steps in the Serenity Prayer. It's all on this little laminated page. And how I can, what can I do for the person? Whoever the person is, how I can do that. And how I can be loving to people in my life and courteous. And it's not always easy, because a lot of the times I just wake up and I'm not in the right place. So a lot of you who have been to my home, there's a living room that my husband and I both use the same chair, because we do it at different times. So we sit down, we have our books there, and I do that. And I would say every day I do that. I did it before I came here. I need that. I need that to remind me every day that I'm a compulsive overeater, and I need that help. I need it. And I'm grateful, because I'm a lot more caring to myself. I feel a lot better about myself. Just yesterday, there was an issue that I made some choices about my food that I wasn't happy with, but it went right in my text this morning. And I can move on. And I'll tell you, it may not be your story, and that's okay, because my story is my story. But that's where I had to get honest, because it helped me to move on and not go into that darkness of binging and eating, because then I got unclear with what was right for me and what was right for people around me. And I can't take care of people around me, but I know that if I'm not in the best spot, it affects people around me. I used to say years ago, like, what big deal? I'm eating. What's the big deal? You know, I'm the one that's killing myself. What's the big deal? Because this was in relapse. So you can almost, this like so much anger. Is what's the big deal? And I saw, once I got out of that, that it affects people around you. And it doesn't help you love yourself a lot. And I'm a work in progress. And I hope I continue this road. I'm very happy with this road. I feel very good. It's kind of like a little bit being new again, like people are noticing the physical. But it's not just physical. It's physical, emotional, and spiritual. I used to hear people talk about it in AA, and maybe they did in OA too, but I think I heard it because I went to a lot of AA meetings when I was young in OA, because there wasn't a lot of good OA meetings, or there weren't a lot of OA meetings. It's okay, and I'll wrap it up on this. The stool, that if you got that three-legged stool that you sit on, and if one of them's broken, if you're not doing the spiritual at all, if you're not doing the physical at all, if you're not doing the mental at all, then one of them's going to break. And so I'll end on that note.